Welcome to the Ecology and Research Channel. Green issues, ecology, incredibly important to embodiment. Obviously, we're embodied in place, we're embodied in a world. How we treat ourselves is how we treat the planet and vice versa. So this is super important, I think, for our whole planet. Research relates to this. We've sort of put two together there. We didn't quite know where to put research, so we put them in with ecology. This stage has lots of great speakers, people I personally enjoy, and it's sponsored by Forests Without Frontiers. So rather than sell a sponsorship for this channel, we decided, you know what, let's give it away to a green charity. Tree planting seemed a good one. We thought we can all get behind that. We all breathe air. We looked into a load, actually. Some of them are quite famous, but don't actually plant a lot of trees, weirdly, or other things aren't so good with them. This one, Forests Without Frontiers, really does the work. They're in charge of a really big reforestation project in Central Europe, but, you know, we're all breathing it, thank you. It's run by Nicoletta, a very cool lady, and just a cool organization that really does the work. The money goes, you know, efficiently to actually planting trees. I'm happy to be supporting them. For me, it was like, you know, when we were looking at our charities to support, a green one just made a lot of sense to me. That just was obvious. Please do support them. Links below. As well as that, enjoy the whole channel. There's so much richness in this topic.
So welcome everyone to the panel. This panel is on Aboriginal, non-Aboriginal ways of being on land. First, we have Sean Nanup. He is a human being, an Indigenous man, and a father. His purpose in life is to connect people through their stories. And we also have Mike House, who's with us today. He is an author, speaker, mentor, and facilitator. He's also a 20-year veteran of survival and stretching and organizational change. So let both of you take it away, and I'll see everyone back for questions.
Oh, lovely. Thank you.
John, okay, so I'm wondering if I can kick this off just by saying I'd like to acknowledge the Indigenous heritage of the part of the country you and I are on, which is Whadjuk people of the Noongar Nation in the southwest of Western Australia. I know you've got deep roots here in this country, and also roots that we share, a country we share our enjoyment of up in the north as well. And for me, I think that, you know, as I acknowledge that, one of the big pieces for me is there's a simultaneous joy and sadness in that acknowledgement. And the joy is that you and I get to connect, and there's many ways that Indigenous people are being invited to have a much greater presence and voice. And I think that's really great and about time. And the sadness is the fracture that we, you know, we could have, had we played our history differently, learnt so much from a culture that was enduring over many, many tens of thousands of years. And it's a pity we missed that gift. But a joy that we're starting to wake up to it a bit now.
Way to go, Mike. Yeah. So I gather it'd be lovely, if it's okay, just to do a small introduction of welcome to our old people. Mm. And I gather we can start from there. What do you think, Mike?
That sounds good.
So being on Whadjuk country and being connected to this country through my grannies, it's with great honour to welcome everyone who's participating there from all parts of the world. And what a welcome will hopefully will represent is the starting point to a conversation about how do we bridge the gap between myself and Mike, and then hopefully others in the world will see the value in our time spent together and the voices that may be supportive of the people in the future generations. So to welcome you today on Whadjuk country, we're part of 14 clans of the Bibbaman Nation, which then extends right across Australia. When we talk about one, we talk about all. And there's over 500 different clans within the beautiful culture of Aboriginal people of this beautiful nation we call Australia today. For us, we call it our mother Budja, in the language of the Whadjuk people. And if you go right across the country, you'll hear all our families talk of love for our mother, the land that gave us life. Obviously, the universe is another mother of ours, and it continues. To welcome you today, we say, Warrawirra Booyah Kanan. Bad spirit, go away. We don't need you right now. Then we welcome you in language, the good old spirits. We say, Murichwirandat Yening, Krobadan, Krobadan, Enyen Yaku. Good spirit, come sit not in the air, but on our skin, Dat Yening. And when you feel the goosebumps going over your body, that's all our grannies. In spirit country, there is no separation. They know nothing of these words we call and labels that we put on ourselves, Australian, Chinese, Japanese, English, Scottish. We're all just a big blend of one big family in spirit country. And then we, and as they dance on our skin, they dance with your spirit child inside you, celebrating an opportunity now for us to do something that we are born to do, and that is to nurture and care for all things as equals. Then we say, Wanju, Wanju, Nija, Wajak, Nyunga, Buja, Wanju, Wanju, Nija, Wajak, Murich, Yogas, Wanju, Wanju, welcome, welcome, Murich is really good. Yogas are women, Murich Maman is our men, to our children, our kulingas, to this beautiful country, and if not, say the world. Hopefully the invitation of our grannies in the past will inspire us to remember their voices of change and voices of empowerment and struggles and to the like, to keep us unified in a way that represents our children's 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 children. Thank you, Mike. I hope that was okay. Hi
that
to
was
all.
Beautiful, Fawn. Thank you. So where should we kick this off, mate? We were talking, I guess, just for the people watching, you know, Sean and I both live in the same area and we've done a little bit of work together and looking at more and we consider ourselves brothers really in spirit. And so it was a great opportunity to have this conversation. One of the pieces that we, I guess, wanted to say up front is, you know, although the title is Indigenous and Non-Indigenous Perspectives About Being on Country, it's really just Sean's perspective and mine. You know, what I certainly can't speak for everybody, and I guess you can't either, really, Sean. And in some ways, those labels aren't particularly useful. So we thought that'd be interesting to just explore a bit what our connections to country are from our personal point of view and then invite some questions and conversations from others. So I guess for me, my background about country is I grew up as a farming kid down in the southwest of this beautiful state. And my dad was a bit unique as a farmer. So I think there's a continuum for farmers from one end where they just kind of go really hard to try and get the best possible yield from their land in one season. And usually that has consequences sometimes for many, many years afterwards. Really good farmers, though, think about how can I leave the land better? And that was certainly my dad's point of view. So he taught me a burning curiosity about the micro level of how things interrelate. And for me, being in the bush and being still and observing detail has always been a place of peace and growth. And then as a survival instructor, I guess that continuum shows up again. There's people whose attitude is, like a lot of popular survival shows would say, it's man versus wild. And I find that concept really interesting. If you put yourself in a competition against nature, you'll never win. Yeah. I don't know what you think about that, Sean, but the notion that it is a competition for a start and that we have any chance of winning it, it seems really ridiculous in my frame.
Absolutely.
You?
So, yeah, once again, our mother has this journey and we're a part of it. And we do our best to tune ourselves to her and acknowledge that we're on the right. And the quicker we're able to humble ourselves to the presence of our mother, then maybe survival is something that we can achieve. Because she gives in so many ways, but she can also take very quickly at the same time if you're not prepared to take the time to appreciate her in every aspects of our seasons that we know we live amongst. Yeah.
So that's interesting, the idea of gives and also takes. It's one quote I heard once, which kind of resonated for me. I'd be interested in your view on it too, is that nature isn't inherently cruel, but it is quite unforgiving.
Yes. And, yes.
For me, one of the things I notice about country is that, I think your frame around our mother is very appropriate, because I see nature, country, land will pretty much give endlessly, and that's one of the issues, I think, is that, you know, we can take, and there's not a sort of protest sign that goes up about that. And a bit like we can do that to our birth mother too. You know, we can take lots and lots and lots from her, and she'll give because she cares. And we can wear her out.
Yes,
because of that. I'd love to know a bit more about the when you talk about country as mother. And I just find that a beautiful frame. Is that something that you kind of, when you were really young, you know, when do you first become aware of that kind of relationship with country? Is it something really innate for you, or something you've learned over time, or a bit of both?
Yeah, well, it's a never-ending, thanks for the question, Mike, and yeah, that's a never-ending lesson that we go through with our family, our mothers and fathers, and anyone in our life, carers and so forth. You know, we're constantly learning, and we underestimate our being. And we try our best to go, well, here's the point now that I start to learn. Here's the point now I start to grow. Here's the point. But the truth is that we are constantly learning and constantly absorbing and growing. And at certain times, the penny may drop. And then all the teachings that were before come to light, and you go, well, maybe with wisdom and, you know, hindsight, all those wonderful things, put them together, we could never make mistakes. But it's part of the journey of learning. And self-discovery is such an amazing thing to be a part of. If obviously when the pain and the hurt, we don't want to suffer these terrible things about letting go. But as you, I do realize, Mike, it's just recent for you, brother, to lose your uncle, and lots of love to you, mate. And, you know, to go through a time of loving and being nurtured and cared for, and knowing at some stage we have to say goodbye to it. And so, you know, our cultural way of being is about acknowledging the process since you're a baby, and understanding that relationship you have with the land is pretty much a reflects in all the relationships you have in your day existence today. And those wonderful mothers that never leave us, because the land will never leave us. Mm. You know, that's why we call it our mother, because she's very solid. Mm. You know, the warmth of the sun. We call that Nank, our mother. Some on other different parts of the world call the sun father, just different parts of teachings. But the relativity of the teachings is there, that it represents something that's very stable in our general way of living. And we do know today a lot of fathers and mothers come and go, and many fathers' names are different. But the actual father-mother role, yeah, it represents and flicks in all the things that we have. And I don't know any too many mothers and fathers out there who are not feeling so nervous about our children growing up and leaving the nest, and not feeling a little bit nervous when they go to their friend's house for a party and know that, you know, they don't get to to just make sure they don't stub their toe or go and do backflips off the trampoline or something like that. You know, we've got to let go of this sense of wanting to put them in cotton wool of our life. So the lessons are there, and it sometimes are very subtle, but those are where great power is, great wisdom is in those subtle teachings. And no better being out on country with a sense of no vulnerability, of no understanding of land and trees and rivers and birds. All of a sudden you look for all the subtleties that can give you some little stable sense of safety, you know. Oh great, we've got water. How can we access water? Is it long term, is it short term? A simple thing like water that we may take for granted today in the mainstream world can be one of the most precious gifts, a trickle of water coming from a tree, you know, and knowing how to make that sustainable. When you see you're able to get it from one tree, and then there's all of a sudden there's 100 trees around, you go, whew, all right, that's one thing taken care of. Now let's look at food and let's look at shelter and getting away from the sun. And obviously many trees, well, we're looking pretty good in that area.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think it's probably worth saying, you and I both know this, but it's worth saying for the audience that the survival work that I did, what we call modern survival, which is basically increasing the gap between when people usually die in survival situations and when they usually get rescued. So there's, you know, typical stats say 24 hours and 24 kilometers from where someone got lost or stranded is usually as far as they make it. And a rescue takes about 72 hours. So it's about how do we hang in for that bit of time? And that's a really different frame for how do we live in the country. And there's still an important link. And I think the important link is that people that do well when they're in genuine survival situations like that, and even, you know, on exercises that I've run or just being out in the bush purely for pleasure, the people who consider it an adversary or who are careless about resources and thinking about resources always have a hard time. The people who can see themselves, and embodiment's a good word for this, who see themselves as part of the landscape, as part of the whole, are usually much more switched on to both the opportunities around them, but also the possible hazards, and are much less blinkered in their view. You know, it's if you can see yourself as part of the whole and genuinely acknowledge the place you're in, and if your back's up against the wall in that situation, acknowledge that, but still find things to be joyful about and to celebrate and be grateful for, it really opens up your view to notice things like, you know, birds flying through and what the insects are doing, and you know, what the heat of the day looks like versus the cool of the night, and that's always useful.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, we're sort of 25 minutes in, and you know, I can do something of a connection to country through the main senses, as I've done with you before, Mike, and then we could lead into something from there. What do you reckon?
That sounds
and
that good
might sure. take me 5 minutes, and then we can sort of leapfrog onto it. So as an Aboriginal person, you know, I've never had to live in a survival mode when it comes to not having water and food. I've been very fortunate. I've put myself in a position to be to understand through my uncles and aunties, so that they give me a teaching about how when we break down our surroundings, so that way then we're left with our senses and our body and our mind and our heart to guide us. That was really a great lesson for me as I grew into understanding what culture really represents. And culture represents survival. And survival is where if you're able to sustain life, then life becomes somewhat of a valued sense of commodity, that where you will do everything you can to maintain it. Because if you enjoy your life and you have a great sense of value, value to that, then why wouldn't you want to pass that on to your children? And these sort of senses of understanding, when you're out on country with your uncles and they break it down for you, it makes you feel very vulnerable because you're now out of a different pattern. And so the pattern of the life today, as I say to many of my family in the communities and the ghettos and the gangs and whatever it likes, whether it be city, if I said to a young person, you know, are you able to identify where water is or how to get water when you're out in the bush? And they'll just pretty much go into, what are you talking about? I'm not quite understand, because their mind is not able to understand the pattern of country because they've always brought up in the city. So then when we go to more of an older person, I would say the same thing. I'm not too sure, because the pattern hasn't been reinforced in the brain about survival. So we're going to break it right down. But if I ask them how to get from one suburb to another or to the city, they'll tell you the number of the bus. They'll tell you exactly what times they come at 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock. If you go there at this time, there'll be about 10 people, there'll be 100 people. Make sure you don't go at this one. But they know that rhythm. And so somewhere along their line, they think, well, if I don't understand Aboriginal culture or bush, then I'm a lesser Aboriginal person. But it's not true. You either are or you're not. And we're all people of this country. And so where do we start saying to ourselves that only Aboriginal people understand this land? When? Oh, you have to do this. Well, the reason why our great gift to the people who come to this country is years and thousands of years of loving and nurturing. So love is a really big key part of us as Aboriginal people. What we have to offer is love for the land and the rivers and the birds and the trees and everything that we know this wonderful land gave us to be sustainable with. And if you take away, as you said earlier, Mike, if we were to learn earlier on about how much gift that Aboriginal people have, then we may have a better world. Well, that's the same for all parts of the world. The key point is the message is love. And if we build love in ourselves, then we'll see love externally. Right now, we're full of separation because we're talking about greed. We're talking about empowering our lives to have everything that we can for our self-worth. And we value ourselves by what we own. And this is the truth. We don't own anything. It's just a gift. We've got to pass it on. So we break it down and it makes people very uncomfortable. So when we talk about being present out on country, we need to be body present, and then we need to be mind present. So mindfulness is very important, getting back to our breath, allowing ourselves to allow our senses to drop. Our heart needs to be present, and our spirit, our soul, it becomes ever present. And it's important for us to understand those realms first. Once we soften everything through our breath, through our sense of being underneath a tree next to a river, and allow the magic of that energy, that rhythm, to become absorbed, then we start to then see the smell, taste, touch, hear, and see become ever-present. What do you smell? What do you hear? And you can only gain 10% of anything you can ever smell, taste, touch, and hear in any given moment. So don't feel as though you need to know everything, or you think you're not getting any information. You are. Your brain is able to absorb millions of information per second. So don't underestimate yourself, as Michael always say, and many teachers. The answer may come later, but you've absorbed it. But trust that you only see what you need to see right now. And that's where we must work from. That's the humbleness of a great teacher. And then we go to the next realm, which is the art, song, dance, language, story. When we get into those realms, that's when you're active. That's when you're part of the environment. Dance like the tree, move like the river. And then you start to get the appreciation from their angle of what they see, what they smell, what they touch. And then your sense of being and every purpose becomes extremely, extremely, incredibly important. Once you understand your place, once you understand your nature, and once you understand, then you'll understand your purpose in life. And so for us, these three things are starting to shift many, many ways, because a lot of people don't understand their place. Because of the shift of the planets and the movement of our people. And then all of a sudden now we start questioning, well, I don't really connect to Australia because I'm not really an Australian, I'm not an Aboriginal, so how can I say I call this home? Many people have said that. And some people say, well, we're here now and we've taken over and now we've become the king of this country and now everyone must listen to us and we become the voice for this land and yours is gone, it's null and void. Because this is the future. Now you get along with us because we are different to you. And if you don't get along with us, well, then you're just nothing but a criminal or a person who's of complete disrespect of the greatness that we bring. And so we see a separation happening internally, not just externally. And then the Aboriginal people of this country, I'm only talking of this country, I'm sure everywhere in the world, they then turn to things to get them through this sense of loss or sense of something that they know that they have, but they don't know how to articulate or understand it. And our separation becomes even greater. And then we start to suppress it with alcohol, drugs, and other forms of social disadvantage, disconnecting. So it just keeps piling up. And the answers to the embodiment in bringing out in somewhat of what we're talking about today, how do we engulf a sense of embodiment and absorb to allow ourselves to become mentally, physically, and spiritually, and all those things balanced? I hope now in this short time that I've given you a little bit of a sense of understanding that Aboriginal people are about saying, well, if we need to get people in tune with this country or wherever you are, then we need to get you to be present with the land and the universe and the stars. Once you're there, we then have to have great teachers around you to get you to soften your mind, your heart, and allow you to then absorb. So then when you go through these next few days, obviously you might have done a few, you'll have great teachers about how to control the mind somewhat, how to control your breath, and how to get your heart to be softened. This is all about getting your body to be ready for the great teaching. And now then you have to become active. Once you activate your heart, your mind, your soul, and your body, you then, which becomes a vessel to be able to express love. And when you talk about love to a room full of politicians, you've lost three quarters of them, if not all of them. Some will stay and go, well, it's a nice story, brother. But we've got all these really big issues that we need to tick. And then we go through to the great leaders of our country. We've got to try and find the balance. So I hope now we can maybe pass it over to you, Mike, and we can see how we find the balance of being able to articulate words that doesn't lose people, because I generally talk from a place of love. And that can be one of the biggest challenges for us to go forward.
Yeah, I think that's really beautiful, Sean. And for me, I think one of the things that I certainly notice it in myself, and I notice it in others when I've been on country and taken people into nature for different experiences, the speed is one of the things that causes that separation too. You know, we're so used to getting there in a hurry. I remember going out to Uluru for the first time and driving into the center of Australia, and just what an experience it was seeing that rock come up from the horizon and slowly approach it. And while I was there, you know, I met many, many people who'd literally just flown in that day to watch a sunset and fly out the next day. Mm. And you go, wow, you know, that's, what are you doing? You're not really here. You're just, you know, flat out behind your iPad, click, 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 click. And then it's a different experience. You know, driving in is one thing. It's a different experience, again, to walk and to sit still in one place and observe. So I think for me, that's one of the challenges, and especially in our modern world, you know, where everything is quite focused on deadlines and transactions and get this done by then, to create the time and space to just pause, to stop, to slow, or to at least slow down, to approach more slowly. And I think that for me, that's one of the ways that connection happens. I notice even around my suburb, which is fairly built up but has lots of bits of bush here too, you know, if I take the dog for a walk and I'm on the phone and quick, got to be home by, you know, whatever time, and shower and into the car for something else, I just don't see anything. Whereas if I breathe and walk slowly and switch on my ears and my eyes and, you know, feel whatever I'm walking on with my feet, all of a sudden there's so much richness there. And it's, I think that's a little bit of a bridge into the love you're talking about, because you can feel yourself filling up, you know, when you look around and start to notice things notice the movements of the sun and the stars and the moon and the birds, and you know, down to little tiny micro things on the ground that you don't even notice the sun if you're charging along. It's just like, well, it's daytime, that's all I need to know. Whereas if you slow down, you start to get into a greater and greater awareness of just how much you're surrounded by incredible diversity and lots and lots of living elements going about their life. And for me, that's where connection starts. You know, it's that slowing down and paying attention.
Can I ask you about, if we're talking about being active, if you're out in a desert scenario where there's not very much tree and it's quite hot, when is the most active time for you to be? Because energy obviously it's important to reserve. When are you most active during the day and night?
So in the desert, especially if water's limited resource, it would be only early morning, late afternoon, and through the evening. You know, it's just pointless moving around in the middle of the day. You'll smash yourself straight away.
So nature has a good way of demanding you to be very clear about moving and being active at times that serve you in the greatest way. And I gather today, being that we've got cars with air conditioning and we've got buildings that we can, you know, eliminate ourselves from the environment, how do you think it would be for us to now, if we were to say to people, let's be active, when can we be active when it comes to our now connection to country? And is there a way that you feel for your teachings for us in this sort of urban way of living or city life, or how do we reconnect that line to that sun coming up and down? Do you know what I mean? And that appreciation of that sun, you know, teaching us something.
Well, I think there's a mentor of mine said something to me once, which I think was real gold. I was in a little bit of a victim space at the time, and you know, felt like I was overloaded with all kinds of things, and life was going past very quick, and you know, there wasn't enough hours in the day and all of that. And he said to me, Mike, go sit down somewhere and watch the sun go down, and you'll see that it goes down at the same speed it always has.
Sorry, isn't that fantastic?
Yeah.
You should go back tomorrow and just double check.
Yeah. Still feels quick. I better check it again. So I think there's a special gift at that transition from the night into the morning and the day, and then vice versa as the sun sets, because there's a window there of about 15 minutes when the sun's, you know, just a couple of finger widths off the horizon. You don't have to watch for long to see that transition, depending on where you are. If you're way up in the Northern Hemisphere or way down south, it might never quite get there. But, you know, pausing to watch the sun get behind the horizon. And, you know, for me, it's about just actively switching off. There's people often complain about these things, you know. It's like, well, how do you find space in a 24/7 always on world? And so you've got to remember that's got an off button, you know. You can switch it off anytime you like, and you control it. You don't control everybody else, you know. They'll fire.
Oh, is into that? Yeah. I didn't realize that. Oh my god. I'm gonna have to Google that.
So, you know, I think part of that slowing down, even if it's just sort of 10 or 15 minutes a day, to put aside that distraction and just go, okay, watch the rhythm. And then if you do that for a while, you can start to notice what else is going on. So, you know, those times a day, there's a lot of activity with birds and other wildlife, even in relatively built up areas. You can see the birds, you know, coming out for a last drink before they go to bed, and you know, night critters start, you know, bats waking up and things like that. And the more you dial in, the more you start to notice how much you're surrounded by, even when you're relatively urban.
So it'd be fair to say is that when you're focusing on one, you're focusing on many. Yeah. Things just seem to line up because you start to allow your rhythm to change or your sense of connection to externally or internally. So would it be fair to say that there's a lot of people out there in this world that are feeling quite overwhelmed in a pattern of living that does not serve them completely?
Yeah.
And we see the effects of that through our body being maybe overweight, as I am, a little bit overweight, not just a little bit, but a bit more. And, you know, then we look at our eating habits, then we look at our pattern through our mind and our hearts, and we try and find ways to be able to get a healthier pattern. So is the answer that simple, Mike, that all we have to do is identify the pattern, the rhythm that we believe is our life, and then alter it to a way that is more sustainable and more healthier? Does it seem that simple?
Yeah, look, I really think it is, Sean. You know, we both know, and we're going to pause for questions in just a sec, but you and I both know from going on country, that's what happens, right? When you take yourself out onto the land and you strip back some of the clutter we're surrounded with, it forces you to slow down, and that forces a different perspective. Even if you're not willing to openly go there and embrace it, it kind of forces itself into your awareness. Yeah. And so I think it is that simple, but that doesn't mean it's easy. You know, switch the phone off and watch the sun go down. You know, I would say that should be my prescription for myself every single day, but I maybe watch one a week. I need to watch it like I watch Netflix, you know, just skip the intro and go straight to the next day.
So what if we were to go to the simplest things as our old people would teach? But this is where we find the frustration in some of the old people's teachings, I find, because that's one thing I was really, come on, we've got to get people to understand and appreciate culture and wake up. And if we see great teachers like Dave Attenborough, you know, speaking to the presence of the world, and he's invited to many places like the Queen and the King and to you know, all the great discoverers of the world, for David Attenborough, for him to struggle in getting people to see the urgency of our climate change and issues that we see in our people, how can we as a people say, like our grannies today, say, why don't we really do a more aggressive way to show that people need to wake up? Because what we do when we're out on country, when we see people say, well, I need to get to do something, I need to do this, and they say, well, let's do it now in the middle of the day and be active and get to the next point. And we say, go for it. You keep walking, mate. We'll wait for the sun to go down a little bit, and then we'll meet you on the next distance. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And if they want to play with snakes that are poisonous, we say, well, if you really want to play with that snake, even though we've told you that it's poisonous, mate, well, maybe you shouldn't go into that river, because in that river there's got a big crocodile. And they say, well, you know what, we're okay, should be fine, you know. And you think, well, when is the point when we have to step in? Because people are not waking up, mate. And we've been sitting back waiting for people to find love, to be able to welcome us to the table, especially in the Prime Minister's realm of Australian government today. And we just don't see the invitation as an equal, and to be able to sit and talk about the direction of our great country we call home. And look after our mother in a way that she gave us the right to do. And so when is the point where we say, or how far is the leash? Just keep going until you finally wake up, and then you can turn around and say, sorry, I shouldn't have run out there in the dark on my own. I shouldn't have went off into the sun. It was a little bit of a silly thing, wasn't it? And some people don't make it back. And we say, well, you know, some people learn and some people don't. Regardless, there's so many suicides today, it's just out of control. And we're worried about the pandemic, but the suicide rate's completely on a graph like this compared to the one of the coronavirus. So, Mike, when do we say enough's enough? Or do we still sit, wait, patiently with a gift of love when the time finally awakens?
Sean, that's a great question, and such a hard one, isn't it? I think I can only answer for how this works for me personally, which is sometimes I have greater energy to kind of try and get in people's face and disrupt some of that and you know, call them back and to try and create spaces and environments for that to happen, and other times where I feel like, okay, off you go. And it's, yeah, it's a challenge. It's almost like at an individual level, we need to find a point of awareness about what we don't know before we even start asking questions, you know. And sometimes, like you say, that's a case of, okay, well, you run along ahead and at some point hopefully we'll work it out and come back and ask me a question. But it doesn't always work that way. We've got a few minutes left, so I'm just wondering if we pause a bit, mate, and see if there's any questions out there.
That'd be fantastic. Yeah. I'm just having a look through some of them now.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a little bit of a scroll there. Have we got any questions, Alicia, at all?
So not quite yet. Thank you, Sean, for coming back with us. A lot of feedback, though. People are saying that this really resonated with them. A lot of folks are, I think the biggest takeaway for folks was how they know how to survive in the time and place that they live in. I'm wondering if you wanted to speak a little bit more about that.
About surviving in the time and place you live in. Look, from my perspective, and this has got a quite distinctly survival hat bent to it, but it's about the first thing is accept whatever the reality is that you are in. And even if that's not pretty, I think that acceptance and acknowledgement is the starting point. And then it's a bit of a case of working out your personal energy for how much you just accept and go with it versus try to change it. And human beings, you know, we've been very good through our history at changing our reality. It's one of the things that we've always done. We look at things that we're dissatisfied with and we, you know, come up with solutions for making things better, easier, and we're very, very good at that. So I think it's a case of moderating your own energy for what that looks like. But I'd go back to what I said at the start about man versus wild. You know, there is no fight. And I think it's partly a case of us working out to what level do we want to exert energy in that space. And I really honour and respect the full spectrum of that. You know, there are warriors who stand really firm in the face of some of the things that are going on environmentally and ecologically and with peoples around various parts of the world and calling our attention to that with bold voices, and that's a really important role. And there are others who try to bring people together and create connection and shared space, and that's a really important role. And there are others who go, for me right now, I can't do either of those things. I've just kind of got to look after my immediate circle and do the best I can, and I think that's fine too. They all have their place.
Sean, is there anything you would like to add?
Yes, I'll just quickly get this back up. My apologies. Trying to play with my phone a little bit. So if we were to look at the surroundings where you are at and appreciating the gift that's in front of you, and taking the time to just take a deep breath and acknowledge. One of the great things that I look for is teachings that have been sustainable within this area. If you find someone who's stopping and pausing and observing and allowing the play so much to play out, and then they intervene or they start to add value or they take a step back. You know, these are the people that I believe when you go to Alice Springs or you go to, I'm sure you go to any parts of any worldly place. If you go up in the Pilbara and the Kimberley for us in Western Australia, you'll see those old people, you know, who have constantly maintained their presence in a very unbalanced situation sometimes. And they're the ones that I usually go up to and talk to and say, what do you see? Where is the gift here amongst some of the tough areas of community? And yet you see them still maintaining hope and drive. And they exist. And so I think our environment is well and truly teaching us something, regardless whether it's a positive or negative. And in those places are great teachers are there. And have we got the awareness to stop and see the presence of them and notice them on a regular basis? So coming back and visiting that space and just seeing them show up and show up, you say, wow, well, why do you keep rocking up? And then sit and allowing yourself to be there to say, oh, I'm not here other than all I would like to do is that I acknowledge you. And that I really appreciate the fact that you see something that I wish to see, I wish to feel. And I would love to spend some time with you to capture it in our intimacy. And I think that's where people in our general surroundings is looking for, is someone who's got the compassion and the grace to walk up with humility and say, I may be someone who's got great knowledge and depth, but I'm here and to be in the presence of those who have lived this place, this environment, who understand it. And is there a place that I can add my value and then vice versa? So I hope that helps in some way, Alicia. Yeah. Is there anyone that has given us a question? Or?
Yeah, so there's a few more questions for you. We're just going to take one more, everyone. And the one that was most upvoted was, how do we introduce those who are not familiar to the culture of the land?
Oh, lovely. What do you reckon? Mike, do you want to have a crack at first?
Sure. For me, that's about... maybe the starting point is it's giving people ways of feeling safe. So particularly people that are separated from being in nature, you know, they've grown up in urban environments. It can be quite threatening, and that's a combination of people who can hold space for them in all that entails, but also who can give them some insight into what they're looking at. So, you know, a forest, instead of just being a wall of green and strangers, becomes a whole heap of different plants and animals and little creatures. And the more you know about that, the more there is to know, but also the more comfortable you feel about it. How about you? What do you think, Sean?
Well, once again, we get back to something of, it's introducing a culture to a group of people from different parts of the world. It's the humbleness of understanding their rhythm and their pattern, and then in tuning yourself to them and allow them, then my teachings with them may be somewhat, or our cultural teachings will become present. Because sometimes we can be a bit harsh in teaching some of these wisdoms that really serve in great glory. So just breaking it down, taking it slowly, getting back to the what do you hear, smell, taste, touch, and then allowing the body to soften is really a good way of teaching people to just know that everyone's equal. And then now when we start to engulf a culture, we get into the art, song, dance, language, story. So telling a story of the land and the trees and the rivers, in the story, the answer will be there. In the dance, the answer will be there. And we then start to develop an intimate relationship with people who go, oh, I can't sing. Okay, well, you say that now. How's the environments that you were brought up in? Has anyone ever taught you to sing? Because it's fair to say that if you haven't been taught, generally sometimes we need a bit of work and taking a very soft approach to that. But if everyone's singing, especially in nightclub, you'll hear some of our great friends singing and dancing when you've got those videos up that we carry now, cameras, and then they play it back the next day. It's like, oh my goodness, I can't believe that I actually sound like that. But in the moment, it's just like, and you wouldn't, and I danced. I was doing all that. And as soon as we break it down, we can become very intimidated by it. But because the environment, we've just got to do our best to create the most safest environment, as Mike said, and allow people to feel trust that it's okay, that you don't have to know everything and you certainly don't have to get it straight away. And let's just take baby steps. And what do you feel on your feet? You know, what do you feel, that cool breeze or warmth going across your cheek? Which direction is it coming from? You know, do you know which way north is or south or east? And all of a sudden, you know, we're in the process of great teachers. So I hope that helps. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that was, it's going to have to be our last question. So folks, what you can definitely do is put that in the TEC Ecology and Research Group right under this live video. And that way we can all see it, get some of your questions answered. And our lovely tech host, Celine, is going to post the links to both Sean's and Mike's website. So you're able to check those out as well. And we are going to come back to Sean and Mike for one final question right at the end here. But first, I just want to let folks know this whole channel, so the whole Ecology and Research channel, all these incredible speakers like Mike and Sean are available to own in your own personal library. And they are going to be available for 48 hours after replay. There's so many amazing things happening in this conference. I know both Sean and Mike have referred to some of them, whether it's breath work, whether it's helping you control your mind better. So please don't hesitate to take a look about buying the whole library that's available now. And it's actually going to be 50% cheaper than it would be buying it after the conference. So for those of you who are looking for what's up next, there is a coffee break happening right now. But after that, we have the Nature's Abundance, which is all about exploring eco-psychology and nurturing practices with Deborah Punton. So that's going to be another amazing session. Sean and Mike, thank you so much. I mean, being here in Canada, there's so much that is going on right now. So I can't think of a more timely topic for me personally. I was taking notes in the background, so I appreciate both of you. I'm wondering, our final question today is, what is your top tip for embodiment?
Thanks, Alicia. For me, it's basically reality is a gift. So, you know, step one is accept whatever situation you're in and work from there.
And you, Sean?
I'll go back to nature and being in the river. And allowing yourself to flow with the river. The river has a natural destination for us. So embodying ourselves into a rhythm that we're constantly swimming in and accepting. So I'd say accepting that we're in this beautiful flow and allowing ourselves to naturally absorb is a blessing. And, you know, spending time with Mike today and yourself, Alicia, and everybody, it's just a blessing that my journey is now going to take me away from you, but at the same time, it brought me a little bit closer to you. And I know Canada, you can only go outside for about 20 minutes at the moment. I think it's freezing cold over there, minus 40 degrees.
I have my heater on right next to me as we talk. Several layers.
Enjoy the energy that you're in and look forward to the next stage.
Thank you both so much. Thank you everyone for coming. We appreciate both of you. And we hope to see all of you again on the TEC Ecology and Research channel. Bye everyone.
Bye. Ciao. Bye.